little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
So I'm making a point about the PSO, where it is. I think I agree with you entirely about the occupational thing, and I think that that's one that the registrars that aren't doing so well tend to ask and then just do nothing with. And I spend a lot of time saying to them, once you've asked that question, you've got to then ask them how it impacts on their condition, impacts on it, as we just explained. But I think the other one that they ask altogether is one package, I think, because they're trying to follow that model, is they kind of ask, who do you live with? Do you smoke? Do you drink alcohol? And what's your job?
Yeah.
And then they just file it nowhere. And I sort of wonder whether the who do you live with? Do you smoke? Do you drink alcohol? It could be missed out if it's not relevant to that particular complaint.
But it doesn't say that, then, does it?
No, but
And I hate alcohol.
Yeah, and I don't... Every time.
Because poorer trainees always gravitate to that because it's safe ground.
Yeah.
You know, good doctors make sure that people don't drink too much and don't smoke. And so when you're in a jam, then ask them about smoking and alcohol. You wouldn't see that in there. When I'm teaching trainees, I will tell them that it's almost an IPU for me, an indicator of underperformance, when people ask about that and then start too early in the consultation.
And because it distracts
them. They can't think what else to do. Thing. And that's what I talk about when I say go and walk about. They go and walk about it. Yeah. They try a few things and then they think, oh, I don't know, we'll go back to alcohol and smoking. And I'm being facetious, but I take your point exactly.
So is it acceptable to say to them, you don't need to ask about smoking alcohol in every consultation? Because I've tried to say that and then they say, oh, no, we do. We've been
told that. No, that is wrong. If somebody comes in with indigestion, then exactly. Smoking and alcohol is relevant.
Yeah.
If somebody comes in with depression, particularly men, I would say it was relevant. You say that sometimes in situations like this, people tend to sort of drink more alcohol. So if that's something that's happened to you, is it relevant? You know, is it such and such? But if somebody comes in with
foot pain or something,
what the hell?
They don't need to.
And that really is. Is the rigid, inflexible approach that you see in potentially failing families.
And it stands out like a sore thumb when you do it and you watch it back, isn't it? But they don't see that. They say, we've been told we have to do that.
Not by me, they haven't. and likewise, you know, it's quite difficult for me because, unfortunately, this thing has almost become my model and I'm some sort of guru. And all I've actually done is refine one or two bits of what is essentially Pendleton's consultation.
I think it's helpful for us to be able to say to the registrars, but we've been told by an examiner this is not essential to every consultation, because the registrars, to my understanding, do think that they have to ask that.
The other thing, I was teaching our current registrar yesterday, who's struggling a bit. He's failed the AKT 3 times. And we were talking about ICE, which is another big thing, which relates to what you're saying, which is, do you always ask ideas, concerns and expectations? And there is that thing about two aspects of it. One is if a patient tells you what their ideas, concerns, and expectations are. So, you know, I've come in, I've got a sore throat, it's really bad. I'm giving a lecture in California next week, and last time I had it, it laid me up for 3 days. So I just wondered if I could maybe have some antibiotics to take with me, just in case, doctor. What were your ideas, concerns, and expectations? You know, if a patient's already told you, and that's active listening. If you actively listen and a patient tells you what their ideas and concerns are, then don't ask them again. Clarify it by all means. Expectations is not a really good thing to ask at the very beginning of a consultation, even though I've put that in there. Because you can, in many consultations, say, okay, so when you came down here, what were you hoping I'd be able to do to help you? Which is quite reasonable. But most of the time, the expectations for me would come further down here, which is a response to a cue that leads to a deeper understanding of the underlying problem. So when you came in, you mentioned that you were going to California to give you such and such, and you were concerned about that. You know, was that your main thing? Were you hoping I'd be able to give you that or whatever? So you can separate it, but the problem is that if you get somebody who's an expert like me and you, it's like saying to a really good skier, tell me how you ski. And they go, well, you know, how did you go around that bend? Well, I don't know, really, I just... put a bit less pressure than you put on when you fell over. Now it's a skill-based thing where you have to have a sequence initially and then you can start playing about. So once you learn how to ski, it's fine, but if you keep falling down on the third bend down the mountain on the red run every time, you should go back to the third bend and try and figure out what you're doing wrong or ask somebody to help you. And so the more that I talk about this and the more that you talk about it is the more you realise this needs to be flexible, absolutely. But this is the bit that informs that bit, which is why it's important. Now, you could shove it there if you want, or you could shove it down here. but it has to happen at some point.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusing.